So yeah, we called it to order and we got it barely a quorum. So I'm Steve Dillard, chair, and I'm at a Seaside. John.
John Reichel. I'm the AOPA representative here, but for the Aircraft Owners Pilots Association. I've just been around here a long time.
Matt McGrath, Port of Astoria.
Luke Mills, just the flight services officer with the air station.
Okay.
I'm Katie Brown. I'm the admin assistant at Port of Astoria.
Henry Balancefer with Oshkosh Airways.
So Deanna got a new job, a promotion. There's a agenda, if you like, Lieutenant. And
what's she doing now?
Working with
terminals.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at that.
So now Katie is helping out, and she will be taking notes and doing minutes and all that stuff. So yeah, I was gonna add a thing that we have to elect a secretary, but thankfully the port is still providing staff. I appreciate that. And so, do we talk to you? Talk to John? Somebody want to talk about Airport Day? You guys have been having a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
And
sure. Yeah. I mean, the open house is moving forward as planned. Still some things in the works, obviously. The next meeting should be pretty informative. Deanna's got all the different forms and maps and all of those different things that we'll be giving everybody. August 22nd is still the date. Still a few things to work out, but nothing too terribly critical at this point. I think it's all moving ahead. So. JR is still responsible for the weather, so.
Oh, it'll be beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be absolutely wonderful. Yeah, one of the things we've got right now is that we've got a request in to get the PBYs and some of the warbirds. So just waiting on that with this fuel thing, or fuel spill thing that we're dealing with in Pier 2 West right now is not the best. So. So, did you have any other updates you want to give on the open house?
Oh, I think so. We're still, yeah. We might have a albatross come in from Kelso if they can get all their glitches taken care of before then. And we still have the N3N with the Coast Guard livery coming in. And we have the Cascade Warbirds that said that they got it posted on their deal and they might have some people sign up yet. The only real competition we have for that day is Whidbey Island Naval Air Station is doing their open house, and there's no longer a Skyfest at Arlington. It's just a fly-in. Arlington lost their Skyfest, but that's the only other things that I know of that are competing with us. So.
And I guess one last note on the sponsorship. So
yes.
Deanna and I were putting together, Deanna's put together the just a brief reason why we're asking for the sponsorships, and basically let the public know the reason we're asking for this is because we want to keep it free for the community. So and then we're going around. We've gotten, I think it's $1,250 in sponsorship so far, something like that.
That's
so,
great.
Yeah, and it sounds like from the two auto clubs, there'll be about 100 cars.
Yeah.
100 cars.
Classics,
show.
Yeah.
Classic cars. Okay.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
They'll show up around 11 and get set up, and then they are going to probably take off about 1:30 and a parade, so that'll be nice.
That's great. And the meetings are, you're still having them weekly?
Bi-weekly, so every other
bi-weekly
week.
Bi-weekly, yeah, on Wednesdays?
Yep, Mondays. It depends. So we're kind of back and forth, yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting...
Yeah, so
weekly notices on Mondays.
We canceled the Wednesday ones and now they're set to Monday. So
okay.
It's every other Monday.
Okay.
Question, because the port typically will put a float in the parade of the 4th July parade. Are you guys putting anything about the fly-in on that?
In the parade? No, I hadn't thought about it.
It's a great advertising
opportunity.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, we can certainly look at that. Sure.
10,000 people be
yeah.
staring at it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well that went quick. So do you have reports for the the port?
Not a whole lot here either. I mean, we've got obviously still some improvements are being done. The FBO stuff is moving ahead. We're a little behind schedule on that. They've got the doors that are 4 weeks out, so it's going to be mid-July before it's done now rather than end of June.
Okay.
But yeah, it'll be done before the fly-in at least. So looking forward to getting all that done. This is going to be pretty slick. Have new restrooms in here rather than the circa 1974 stuff that we had before. So that's nice. Of course, we finished up the A-Row stuff. We're working on the taxiway A and B realignment right now through the grant process. So going through that, getting that cleared up with FAA. FAA's been out here working on VOR, getting that squared away as well. Updates on that just to make sure that it stays functional.
So they didn't decommission it and now they're
going to update it. They asked to decommission it. We said, no thanks. We want to keep that operational. I said, okay. So they're going to do some upgrades on it. So to that, it's just keeping cattle off of the runways, and we've got the deer are back, so we're going to have to look at doing a culling here in the next, well, probably, I mean, for following tradition, it'll probably be October somewhere in there when we do it. So,
okay.
So we had gone and ended up getting, I think, 10 tags from Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then ended up sending them back because we couldn't see the deer. Never saw them for like 4 or 5 months, and of course, about a month after we sent the tags back, we saw the deer. So, so we'll get them again, but it'll probably be October before we do our hunt. So, and one of the things we're going to look at is setting up a feeder.
Mm.
So
that'll make it easier to haul.
Yep. So
I didn't think that was legal.
Well, for airport control, it's different.
Yeah.
It's,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Got a band of coyotes in here, but they don't ever seem to be on the runway when airplanes go through, so.
Yeah, predators and prey have a different intelligence level, I've noticed.
Yeah. Well, we don't have any FBOs. Does the Coast Guard have any reports?
Nothing from our end. We're going to have a whole lot of construction going on, a lot of our projects, like our roof upgrade and all that stuff, so it's like there's going to be contractors and stuff like this. We're going to be fighting FOD as best we can. But just awareness that there's going to be some serious construction. We've got the roofing and then a whole like ventilation project on the horizon too. Shouldn't really affect anything and it should all be totally contained to us. But if you see people running around getting work, like it's contractors,
yeah.
You probably need to redirect them.
Gotcha.
Okay. Thanks.
That's all for me. If you guys have anything for me, just let me know now or whenever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're going to have the third helicopter up and running by airfare time, you think, or?
Probably not. there's a Coast Guard wide shortage of 60s right now, so that problem's going to be a little bit longer than anticipated for the Coast Guard.
Yeah, that's too bad. And nothing to do with your air station here, but I read in one of the Coast Guard deals here about a year ago that they're slowly going to be phasing out all the 65s.
Yeah, that's been in the docket for a while, just because pretty much, I mean, it was originally an executive aircraft to begin with. The company that originally made it got sold, and then that company got sold again, you know. So pretty much every gearbox that exists for that helicopter is now owned by the Coast Guard. No one wants to manufacture them anymore, so the clock is ticking, so we have to start decommissioning them, repurposing their parts to keep whatever's left of the fleet alive, and then they're moving towards just replacing them with 60s.
When that happens, is Newport going to shut down?
That's up for debate right now. The Coast Guard's been weighing it because they're kind of in our AOR, so, and the 60 obviously has a lot longer legs, so the Coast Guard's got no idea what they're going to do, though. They don't think that hard, and definitely not that far in advance.
Is Coast Guard still buying the J models?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the new ones are still J's?
Well, we're Tangos for the 60.
Okay, you're playing Tangos.
Yeah, so we're Tangos. The 65's Echo. C-130's the J model, but because of the 60 problem we're having right now, we're looking to open up like actual production lines for the 60 from Sikorsky. All of ours are ex-Navy, typically, that we have to repurpose, or ex-something.
Okay.
But because of how short we are on 60s, I think Sikorsky's looking at opening a line, so we'll see. And those will be different, and the Coast Guard's going to have to adjust because nothing can ever be the same.
Probably like Romeo models, right?
Yeah, I think they're going to be closer to Romeo than anything. But obviously we have a couple of different things under the hood that are a little bit different, especially when it comes to like our hydraulics and our hoisting and all that stuff.
Actually, I have
an
asterisk on a couple of things. So one was, you know, on the airport open house. We talked about life flight because what was happening last time was a disaster. So that's been solved. So they're going to be on the other side of the fuel farm. So
okay.
We keep them out there, so we won't have that issue again. And then
they
just
can still do operations.
Yeah, they can. And then we just need to make sure. I mean, what Dan was saying is that they might need to, if there is some mechanical issue, they might need to tow it back in to the hangar, which is fine. We can just get them a path, it'd be fine. But that'll we should alleviate the problem of having to hang on to tents and make sure that people don't go flying off. So that's good. And then just as an FYI for the airport, we actually are military contract fuel now.
Who's it through?
Through Valcom.
Oh, Valcom.
So, yeah, and it's a Coleman Oil thing. So, yeah, so, and we had to get 50,000 gallons of military sales first before we qualify. And, yeah, so it's going.
Big win.
Well, yeah, so that's a big deal for us. So, yeah,
so,
and then.
And all the local guys know that. So
yep, we're starting. These guys have been really good about getting the word out.
Okay.
So, and it's kind of strange. You would think that everybody that comes in military would be just, hey, just go ahead and do it. But they're kind of still, some of them are still cards. Some of them will just give us the tail numbers and we're good. But, you know, that's, I mean, I don't know the last time that happened. Like, when was that back when Larson was here?
Before Larson, before they gave it up then when. The old FBO was over there, you know, where the...
Oh, Five Freddy's?
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
Whoa.
And then Sterling had it, and when he sold it and got rid of the business, he retired from it, the port took it over, the fueling.
Sure.
And it was only a short while after that that they lost it because they wouldn't do the checks and all that. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, so, I mean, this is really a testament to what Chris and John have been doing because a lot of this is because we had the fire season and they didn't have a fueling contract and wanted that, and so they made a specific request to Phillips, you need to put in an application for a contract here because we want to be able to fuel here. So
I'm really sorry, y'all, I got to step out.
All right.
Let me know.
Priorities, I get you.
No, that's right. I'm really sorry, guys.
No, appreciate it. Look, no problem.
Yeah, have a good one, y'all.
So,
stay dry.
So, yeah, and I think that this is another one. And a lot of times with these contracts, you have to really take a cut in the margin. But with this, we're so desired as far as the government goes that the margin that we had to take was about 15 cents per gallon. So we should be able, so because typically we're at about $2 a gallon. Right, and this contract is $1.85, so what? Yeah, I think that we'll be able to make that up with volume pretty quick. And the intent behind this was to get to our next plateau of jet fuel sales, which would be 250,000 gallons in sales. So that's what we're after right now. So that's the next big one. And I think we could probably hit 165-175 this year, and then get 250,000 next year. But in talking with the guys from Valcon, I said, yeah, you're likely going to beat a 250,000 pretty quick. So, and at which point, we've got a fuel capacity issue. Which is a good problem to have because if we can either look at a tank or if we needed a quick solution, we can just get another fueler.
Sure.
So, which would be, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a month for a rental. Who cares if you're pulling in 20,000-30,000 gallons a month? So,
if you did a new fuel farm, would you put a cover on it?
Don't know. Putting in a tank is probably unlikely at this point just because of the costs.
Yeah,
they're going crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we get to a point where we're just pumping so much fuel that it just makes every bit of sense, then we'll do it. But, you know, we could get another 5K truck or even a 10K truck and then, you know, have a lot more capacity. Give us a lot more bandwidth. So.
And you probably want trucks anyway if you're dealing with military aircraft.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's a really good way to add bandwidth, and it doesn't get us into all the grant stuff that we need to do, and these costs are going up crazy. crazy, where it used to be just, you know, 100,000, 150,000, 200,000, now you're in like half a million. It's getting...
I was thinking the military planes probably don't pull up to the pumps as often.
No, no. Yeah. So, yeah, we're always coming out to them. So and we typically got them out on the abandoned runway or elsewhere. So, yeah. You know, we'll go and we'll hot gas them. We'll do all that type of stuff. So okay. any of that stuff is helpful. Mobile. So, yeah, and then this is going well. We're getting more. I can't imagine how much money we spent on pizza at Costco, but it's been worth it.
Bring them in.
Yeah, been worth it. So that's my good news.
Well, that's great. So, yeah, I guess Wes and Deb are planning, the EAA is planning on doing a Young Eagles at the open house, Young Eagles Day, and I guess they had a successful... kind of thing for the adults that they did.
Bald eagles.
Bald eagles.
Yes.
Where start. They fly the adults. Oh, okay. Flying start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I guess that's it. Now, you wanted to talk about a review of the airport status, about the projects that are going on or have been completed? Or?
Well, more so I was wanting to talk about, you know, we are an advisory to the commission. They haven't tasked us with anything for quite some time, but there's nothing to prevent us to let them know that there's, I interpret it as a real positive shift out here.
Okay.
And at the same time, I'll share you know, Dan Leary, who, well, Dan had expressed some real strong turns about this too, and so I was gonna read what he had sent me, but. If I can figure out how to operate my end. So I'll just read it off verbatim. It's not that long. It says, the Astoria FBO service is at an all-time best. I've been based here the last 16 years with the U.S. Coast Guard and Lifeline, and I've had a hangar here the last 7 years. Matt, Chris, and Johnson are customer-focused, and they continue to generate new innovative ways to draw aviation traffic to KAST. I can't give them higher praises. Their constant dedication to making KAST the preferred fuel stop for military and commercial recreation aviation has and will continue to pay dividends not only for the port of Astoria but for local businesses as well. And as you know, Dan, he retired from the Coast Guard here as the operations officer, and so he's seen a lot of changes. A few years ago, before Matt became deputy director and had the airport responsibility too, one of the employees was an ex-Coast Guard person that was here, and I witnessed this, and I thought it was intolerable. I witnessed this. Two Coast Guard officers came over here to try to talk to him. What they wanted to talk to him about is they were having problems with their fuel farm, and if they needed to, and you know, we're talking about life-saving, you know, stuff, but if they needed to, could they count on the port to supply the fuel for them? And the employee said, I had to listen to you Coast Guard officers my whole career when I was there. I don't have to listen to you anymore, and I'm talking to you. Turned around and walked away from them. And then there were other incidents come up. Somebody, he didn't like somebody because somebody didn't realize he was working here, and he parked the car over here, and he said, that's $10 a day. Making up fees and stuff, you know, without. But there was a lot of bad will, and I used to get, usually with my AOPA, ASN responsibilities, I'd get an average, I probably averaged about two a month, but you know, during the flying season, it was more in the winter, you didn't hear much, about complaints about the Astoria Airport.
Wow.
I don't get any anymore. In fact, I've never, and Brad, our regional, he's in charge for seven states, the OPA district representative, he said, we see compliments for Astoria popping up on the computer all the time. And that never happened before, you know. And I think it would be it's been very positive, you know. Money fixes a lot of stuff. And there's only so much money to go around. But if you look at the trend that we've been doing, repairs here, you know, drainages out at the hangars, that some of those hangars are almost untenable. They had 2-3 inches of water in them all winter.
Yeah.
They're dry now, you know. They've done some repairs. and can't do everything at once, but the whole trend of making the place more presentable, the way the staff treats people when they come in. So I thought it would be appropriate for us, because the commission itself, they have a liaison who, there's some friction between him and Matt that has nothing to do with what Matt's trying to do. And so I don't think much positive ever gets passed on. I think it would behoove us to make sure that they get the support to continue the direction it's going, for us to just make a status report of the airport to the commission itself. And I think complimenting the employees, I've seen such a difference. You know, you come in here and the boss is not around, he's doing his other things, and yet your people out here are looking for things to do to improve. Johnson was going through the hangars the other day talking to people about, because a lot of the outlets are so wore out that the plugs fall out. And he's just going out there seeing how many need to be replaced and all that kind of stuff. They're always out there. Somebody calls, you know, it used to be I'd call and say, hey, you know, there's no power to my hangar because somebody might have put down the way, had to put a compressor or something in that, you know, and it kicked off the breaker. Mm-hmm. Now we'll be there in 5 minutes, you know, and they come right down if they're around. If they're not, they're probably out on a tractor somewhere clearing brush and getting brush back. And so I thought, you know, with the feedback I'm getting and the feedback that Dan Leary and one of the guys at Brims was talking about how much better things feel here, the animosity that used to be between Seaside Airport and here, with Matt going down attending some of their meetings and there's a dialogue going, the guys are now up here hanging around, you know, and that's a positive. They're also in the tax district of the port, you know, so I think it would be the appropriate thing to do is to let the commission know that, hey, I think we think that the airport is going in the right direction, that efforts are being made to make the area more presentable. The other day, I think it was Johnson was talking about, you know, that the port's kind of looking at down by the hangars where the fire hydrant is to maybe put a washing station in there. They got water supply and then they don't have to worry about the runoff going into the storm drain and all that. I think just that kind of thought process that they're constantly looking at ways of improving things is very encouraging. And if we can, I'd be happy. I realize there's not many people here and I'm hoping Matt's doesn't need a bigger hat, but I'd be happy to start drafting a letter and then sending it to you, and you could kind of do what you want with it, turn it around and let the other staff people, I mean the other committee members see it or something, and use that as a starting point.
So, and then you want to go present it verbally to the commission? Or
I don't know if that's, if we're invited to go, otherwise I think we could just, you know, because they get a packet. Like you did when you were on the council, right, you get right. The packet, and if it's included in the packet, you know, I don't know if we'll accomplish anything, but I think the feedback is important. I think they need to know that things are improved out here quite a bit.
Yeah, if you want to work something up and send it to me, we can sign it and send it, or put it out like you said to everybody, and they can people
tear it apart and
add a red pencil it or add a paragraph or whatever.
Yeah.
I would suggest. You know, making sure not just the soft points, which are important, but also, like, there's been some major improvements in the airport since as well. And I think, you know, one page to keep it simple, you know, would be good. And I think it should be in writing, and also, you know, Mr. Dillard or somebody else to present that also in public comment to the commission, just to make sure it doesn't just get filed away. Maybe get some press, you know, out of the public comment to reinforce it as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a good point projects that they've been doing the last 2 years, 5 years. The commission's writing checks or signing projects, signing off on projects, even if FAA is paying for it or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're approving a lot of stuff. It would be nice to say, oh, yeah, this, you know, whether it's the A-Row or the, you know, my hangar doors. My wife can open the hangar. It's a lot of concept, you know.
Functional doors.
Yeah, doors that actually open without having to. Yeah, so all of the improvements of it. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. But
yeah, there was a while back because I was having a friction you mentioned, like, hey, nothing's getting done at the airport. So Will says, well, what's been done at the airport? I'm like, well, if you want me to start putting a list together, I can. And when I did, it's not insignificant. And you forget about the stuff that started, even just going back to the QT pod, you know, getting that in here, getting the fences in here. I mean, because remember, none of that was working 5 years ago.
Right.
This is all of the stuff you just kind of forget about. And then this place looked like death warmed over. I mean, it's just, and people would come into the FBO and just like, is this abandoned or what? So it's just nice to have that. And, you know, like you're saying, JR, is that money fixes a lot of ills, but you know the resources are important. And this is something that I brought up to the Oregon Department of Aviation. It says, you know, when you look at kind of the past of the KAST's history, the port didn't put a lot of resources out at the airport. It was just kind of treated as an off. And it says, you know, the first resources we needed to really put into it were human. Right, we need to find the right people for this place, and so really, I do credit, you know, Chris and Johnson with completely changing the attitude around here. It's like, look, this is aviation minded now. This is customer service, and so, and I've got it back on that board, like unreasonable hospitality. It's like, you know, just make sure that everybody understands that they're welcome. That we're going to do whatever we can to get them here, and that it's with an airport that's this big that's been kind of neglected for so long. It is in by degrees, out by degrees. So it's not going to be just something that happens in a year, but over time there's this kind of cumulative return. And I think that we're starting to see that, where we're right just getting to this point where you're on this exponential curve and things are really starting to take off. And you know, I think we're seeing more interest here. We're getting more questions. We have more people that want to locate here. And so I think it's important for us all to kind of band together and have a good framework so we can start adding when we have these people wanting to come in. And
well, and even with just the maintenance been done, you know, 5 years ago, I mean, it was just trying to get basic necessities here, but like, you know, I was just driving by on Airport Road and the fence line has been, you know, mowed again.
Yeah.
Because that grows up quick.
Yeah.
You know, those willows just don't take much time.
Yeah.
But just staying on top of it
just
shows a level of detail and interest and investment that you'll see, you know. Yeah.
4 years ago, they wouldn't have got a military fuel contract.
No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Well, and the interaction is great.
Yeah, and the airport road out here. Anybody remember that?
Yeah.
Plus, you know, line drive, Oh, God.
Having vehicles available, and it's easy for people to come and get them, you know.
Sure.
And so.
That's huge for the transient pilots, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and that's been, you know, now there's three, right?
Yeah, we've got the crew car and the two rentals, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Which reminds me, I got to ask for next year's CIP if we're going to plug in, whether it's going to be a road redo or if it's going to be a overlay for 12th. I'm starting to see cracks in that road. It's gonna be a little scary. On the city side.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The entryway.
Yeah.
But have you noticed all the student pilots and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's refreshing. I mean, it really
is.
So
it all builds on itself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. So I'll get a draft and I'll get it to you. You can send whatever you want to do with it. And you know, I do hope people want to add to it or pick it apart and stuff.
Now, that's something we can do on an email, right? We don't have to do public.
Technically,
whatever.
That would be a public meeting. I would suggest just getting the list from Matt. You kind of massage it and then send it to him and have it just kicked out and just have the committee consensus as being sufficient to move it forward. I think if you make that camel by committee, this will be a month and a half out before you get there.
Yeah, good point.
Technically, I can't even hold town halls in the community center in Warrington because we don't have the AV to allow everybody to attend. And if I take any of the information or take questions from that under OGEC law, that would be a personally liable meetings violation to then take that to the commission and tell them what I found out in my town hall.
Yeah, but you're elected official.
It's all public bodies.
Yeah, but we're an advisory, and if it's not something that the board has to make a decision on.
But if it goes to the board.
Oh, okay.
That's the issue.
Oh, yeah. Things might have changed since.
It changed last year.
Oh, did it?
Well, this last session.
Well, I'm ignorant of the changes, so I don't follow it anymore.
Yeah.
So, okay.
They had to allow it.
Lucky
so
you.
They made it individually and separately liable to the individuals making the issue. So, like, if Mr. Dillard went and you know, held a form and reported to the commission, you're personally liable for that violation, not the port. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful changes.
But they did make it so that you could feed advisory committees now. That's now legal. That was illegal for 2 years.
Feed?
Yeah, we couldn't feed the commission or advisory committees.
Okay.
I have a little, in the City Hall, I have a little thing that's got like, a guy looking over a fence, and it's got an Oga cat, you know, like, here, you know, like, violations everywhere.
A Kilroy.
Yeah. But I think it would be quickest and more efficient just that. Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay.
Okay. So, on the next one, we talked in January about, everybody seemed positive about the idea of putting together an electronic meeting, options for electronic meetings, and especially with two of our members, voting members, being not here today. Yeah, you had asked the thing about the bylaws.
Yeah.
I had gotten a copy of the bylaws and of the procedures from Deanna a couple months ago, and copied liberally out of what the port already had in place. And we could just ride on the coattails of what the paperwork that the commission already has in place and provide public access. Like if Mark wanted to listen or be a part of the meeting, he could do that. But if we're going to do this, my goal would be to have a remote member, somebody that's electronically connected. And I've seen this done on the telephone, where you just call them up, put it on speaker, set it on the table. I think if everybody in the room can hear it, then I think we're within compliance there. But I would my goal, and I've so I printed that out on the draft that I sent to everybody. My goal would be to have that person, so say we've got Mark on the phone right now at his campsite, that he would be able to count for a quorum and that he would also be able to vote. So what I've seen on the commission bylaws, they can't vote. They can participate but not count for a vote. They have
really?
To be physically present is the way they had it. And
interesting.
So anyway, those are three things. Just participate. But my goal would be to have it count for a quorum, and to have it count for also be able to vote, so that we can move committee business forward, and then vote on something, and then present it to the commission. So that would be, you know, since we're only getting together a few times a year, that would be, and we're as mobile as everybody is. There's no way we're going to get a bunch of pilots. Everybody here, 100% physical attendance, I think, is going to be real slim. Chance of getting that done. So I'm open to suggestions, and then if you're going to make a
formal policy change, I would recommend making a hypothetical to the OGEC, because if you provide an electronic attendance method, it has to be available on the public notice. So if it's on someone's phone, that has to be the number that people can call, and if somebody wanted to attend virtually, whether they do or not.
Oh, really? Okay, so if you put out a...
So my advisory committee is for marinas. They have to meet in the commission chambers instead of at the marina offices, because it has to be available to the public virtually. It's that new, they passed it a year and a half ago, some sort of stupid thing about how, even though nobody attends them virtually, nobody comes in person either, but like, yeah, I swear the state just makes it harder and harder every year.
Mm.
I would just, I'm not saying you can or can't, I would say get a hypothetical from OGEC. I can ask for you if you want.
Okay.
That way it's under the city's auspices. They're not looking over here.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to ping them.
Okay,
and
so...
I agree with you. If we can have it to where they vote, I mean, you know, I don't know about the recent changes. When I was on the county commission, you could vote remotely, you know.
Oh,
and,
really? On the
county?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, city you can too.
Yeah, so there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to as an advisory committee. We don't make final decisions here. So.
That was my thought, is that if they have that kind of restrictions on the commission, I get that. But, yeah, in order to move things forward, I would say we could probably be a little more loose on that.
I would probably say maybe if there's a way that you could just call somebody up and just make it so that if somebody is... Yeah, the only thing I would say is if you put it into formal policy, then it triggers your own... changes your game a bit.
you lost me on that last line.
If we're needing a quorum and you call somebody up.
Yeah.
Okay, you called somebody up and got their opinion, right? But if you are having an electronic attendance of meeting and a formal policy, then it needs to be open to everybody. So whoever's phone is being used has to be the one that's noticed on the public notice.
Okay. So I
that just gets messy.
I was trying to keep it low-key until we got to the place where we got the technology in place. I mean, we've got a screen there. We could set up a laptop. We could bring a laptop and do the...
Zoom.
A little bit of setup to do a Zoom or a Teams meeting or something like that. But somebody would have to, and you could even manage that on a phone, right? Or a tablet.
That's what we do for the commission meetings. So
really? It's on a tablet?
Yeah, it's just hooked up to it.
And we've got the TV in there too.
Yeah. All you have to do is
super
just
simple.
A Zoom link or whatever, just as long as it's on the notice.
And that's how our.
And then that would
is.
Be, the Zoom that's link devices. Would be the notice, and then so it would be. Subscription. There's a cost for that.
They just click on it.
Yeah, so, and that was one of the reasons that we put that monitor in there.
Okay.
If we needed to have meetings, we could do them in there instead of having them out in the.
And you can call
space.
In, or you can go through the like online.
Yeah.
So you can be on the phone or the computer doing it.
Okay.
So the audio is all that's required. Then you don't have to have a visual.
I don't think you have to have visual.
That part I do not know.
Yeah.
Well, I know, like I attended a couple of the budget meetings by Zoom for the RLED, and some people just blanked off a two where they didn't want their picture taken because they were probably sitting in their bathrobe.
Well, did you see what happened to County?
Uh-uh.
Somebody was taking pictures of body parts and making them their profile picture, and then another guy hijacked the county meeting and started playing porn on it.
Oh.
They had to shut the meeting down and restart it, and yeah. But I know that if we lose Zoom connection, the meeting has to stop until they can resume it, if it's noticed like that.
If it's a member?
No.
Anybody?
If Zoom doesn't work and the public doesn't have access, you have to stop the meeting until the access is resumed.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why I put that clause in there about dropping a connection. It's like, okay, look, we would stop for 30 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever, trying to get reestablished, but at that point, you can say just, okay, well, Mark's not here, so we're just going to move on and do what we can without him here. I don't see a lot of, well, that doesn't make a difference.
Because the difference is now that...
We don't have a lot of public participation, mm-hmm. but if we set up the technology, then it's part of it. Is that
yeah,
what you're
my
saying?
My
if we make it available to... If we make it available in order to get a quorum or in order to get a vote, we have to also allow public to remote in as well.
So, as I understand it, because public meetings law violations are no longer something you submit to the DA. They go to OGEC now. Mm-hmm. So the Government Ethics Commission now has jurisdiction over ethics complaints. And the port should have a policy in place that talks about grievances that people can file, saying, did you have an illegal serial meeting? And if so, what was your policy? And then if that doesn't work, then they can go to OGEC. So the first step is the complaint of the port. Mm. And if they don't like that, then they go to OGEC. And then OGEC would level fines directly to whoever was involved. But they disperse the responsibility to the individuals that are the appointees or the electeds that are involved in the meetings violation. Mm. So, there's like a whole thing on the OGEC page about it. I took the training.
Can you send me a link on that?
Sure, yeah. Okay. I took the training like a year ago and my eyes started crossing. So
it's not OGEC, it's not a one-man show anymore. It's not Patrick Hearn anymore.
It's a freaking wing of the Capitol, basically, full of lawyers who are just looking for strange things.
Looking for a reason to exist.
Yeah.
Okay.
League of Oregon Cities had to get three bills passed to try to get overturned decisions of OGEC that were not technically in law, but they made it law because of their rulemaking authority. Yep.
They can write OARs?
Mm-hmm. Well, if they issue an opinion, it's like the Supreme Court, basically. They issue an opinion and that becomes law. Because they're the finding body.
Yeah, so at that point, are we creating more... I was trying to move things forward and try to make it easier not to... involve a us in this.
The only reason I'm concerned about it is because anytime a port or any government agency gets in the paper, then you get the activists activated, and they start scrutinizing everything, looking at everything, looking under every rock, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the airport at one point was on the list for being an ICE detention facility. So now that everything's riled up on the port docks, I can only imagine if somebody is now starting to get their spidey senses up at the airport, even though that's a dead issue here. So just expect potentially more scrutiny.
I still think it's a worthwhile effort.
I'm not saying it isn't.
Yeah, because, you know, that is a common way for a lot of entities to operate. And maybe we could get I think you've written up a policy already. We could find what works in other areas. And if we find out that we're in error somewhere, we can always make that change.
We can, and we can also put the policy in place and never use it. I was very purposely vague on the technology because, I mean, I've been doing electronic meetings for 30 years, so it changes. But it sounds like this oversight stuff is going to be the hardest part, not the tech itself. But we'd have to figure it out. Once we put it in place, we say, okay, we want to do this for the December meeting or whatever, or when we vote next January or something, then we'd have to get that all in place, and then, you're right, get out and put a Zoom link.
If you want, I can just ask for an opinion from OGEC, and then once you get that, then it's like basically good to go.
Okay. All right, so we can move forward with it. So
maybe special districts have a special exemption. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Schools are usually ignored, but...
Well, schools have to Zoom their meetings now, too.
What's that?
School boards have to Zoom their meetings now, too. Required by law. All of them.
So, again, like you said, if we ask them, maybe they'll put us on the thing where we're...
I'll just ask them as, like, from a city side.
Required to Zoom it, yeah.
And then...
Okay, so it's a good idea. We like the idea of counting the remote person for a quorum and counting them where they can vote. As I was going through this stuff, I kept rereading that one section about the person that goes dormant, and the committee or the commission can declare their position vacant and appoint somebody else. And I was trying to keep from crossing up that, because that, I can't tell, even after rereading it, whether that was originally designed as a way to enforce residency requirement, but it's a very useful tool. You know, somebody's not here for four meetings, you know, so Bob moves to St. Louis, but he calls in on the next three meetings. Well, you know, I would say that would not count for this inactivity thing. You know, you're out of town, Mark's out of town. One or two meetings. So anyway, I was trying to avoid stepping on that if the committee still wanted to use that as a way to enforce residency.
Well, you know...
So that's what that part of the...
residency is not within the district, though, you know, because the service area for this airport includes Southwest Washington.
Right.
And that's why we have Mark, a representative from over there, too, so...
Yeah, but I was thinking, well, Doc moved to Arizona, right? So
right.
Do we want him to still be a voting
no,
member of the
no,
board?
Yeah.
Right, so anyway, that's why the wording there, I was trying to say, yeah, you could say electronically present counts for this, but I was trying to avoid that and say, no, let's just keep it separate. Any other...
No, okay. I think it's a good direction.
Somebody want to make a motion, and
we got a quorum.
You mean
we just lost our? Is that enough?
What's that?
Is that enough?
Well, there's five of us, right? There's five voting members.
I thought there was seven.
Seven. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Henrietta, you have the Coast Guard.
Okay.
You have two others.
Okay, so without the Coast Guard here, we don't have. We can't vote. All right. So we could have if. All right. So.
I think we could still pursue everything and then just the next time vote to...
Okay, so we can just bring this up again.
Yeah.
And
maybe have it kind of tailored by then. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll work with you on the come up speed on the tech there. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
guess that's it. Anything else for the good of the order then?
Can't think of
anything. I think we covered everything pretty well. 3 months from now is September 14th, which would be a good very soon, which would be very soon after the
fly-in
to do a debrief.
Yeah.
Does that work for everybody?
Yeah,
September 14th?
So. It's all good. Yep.
Okay. Any other business? Anything?
I'm going to be gone for pretty much most of July for EAA, Air Venture. And then gone in October for NAAA. But they've stripped Lectro of the 88i. Then they're discontinuing the 8850 line. So our biggest production line is going to be shut down here probably in a couple months. And it's being replaced by the 88i line, which is being built in Orlando, Florida. And then they're taking our second largest production line, which is our biggest moneymaker, the 89s. And they're not yet designed the 89i, but that's likely to be built in Orlando as well. And so I'm guessing that's probably 2 years out. But at that point, there won't be much that we'll be producing here. They are talking about turning us into a refurb shop and still building small units. But if you probably have noticed, there's a lot less cars in the parking lots because our employment went from 120 to like 47. So,
Are people moving to Orlando?
No.
It's too bad.
It has been 2 years of really harsh de-icer years, so they're trying to keep that workforce afloat, I guess. Since we're on the record, I won't express my opinion about that workforce down there. But so they've been running that. And then, and we're undergoing a major 80-20 restructuring of the business, so should be interesting.
I was surprised. I took a plane. I delivered a plane to Kansas, and I came back through Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to move. There was a hailstorm coming in, and they had to move a lot of equipment out of the way and stuff. Never seen so many electro tugs. Wow. Looking down there, and it's like four towing at one time, and then there's a bunch of them that are moving in unison to another section to move stuff, you know, and I go, wow, there's a lot of equipment here that's electro.
Commercial.
We got a demo this week at Naval Air Station North Island. So.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a big base. But, there's no current plans announced to do anything other than grow the business, but manufacturing has been interesting lately. I'll just put it that way. We're selling record numbers still. It's just they're not.
How far out are you guys now?
We've got lead times October, depending on which line you're buying, but
oh, really?
Like October for the most part.
Wow, that's
great. When Eric Paulson had us, he sold us about 35 mil, and we're on track for that this year, maybe 37.
Yeah.
They've got a massive plant in Orlando, and they've got some product lines that just, are, in my opinion, are half-baked.
Yeah.
So, they're not selling as much as they used to, and so they're trying to make it up for the rest of their team there. Yeah. So.
One of the last conversations I had with Paulson last year, a while ago, when you guys are so backlogged, 18 months out.
Oh, yeah, we've got that under control.
Yeah, so
part of that was moving stuff to Orlando where there's a bigger production team.
Yeah.
But our profitability is much better in Warrenton than it is in Orlando.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because they build so many different products in Orlando or if that's, I think part of it's just their production process is really.
Yeah.
So, we're just trying to figure out what's. Where do we fit in the company, so to speak?
On the niche.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scratch the itch after we get it.
Scratch the niche.
Well, thanks.
Yep.
We're adjourned.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.